Welcome, welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome to another CT Just Tennis, Advanced Tennis Talk, and I'm your host, Coach Wes Fuller, along with my co-host, Susan Nardi. Hey, Susan, how are you? How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, and you, Coach Wes, how's everything in your end of the world? Staying warm?
I'm pissed off. I'm pissed. I am a pissed coach, very pissed coach. In the last month, I have worked a total of 9 days. Nine days. It has rained or been cold for 9 days. I had a chance to go out Sunday. Boom, Monday. Here it is. Last week, all my kids out of school. I get a chance to see all my kids every day. It rained last week. Kids coming back at high school matches the next day. No, I'm a pissed off coach. We don't have any indoor coaching in our facility. I am upset. I'm upset. What about you? What about you?
Fortunately for me, the weather is better outside the Houston area than it is there. Although I must admit, I do miss my Southern California beach home, you know, being at the beach where the weather was almost always perfect. But the weather, it's been a little cold here, but at least we haven't had the snow and ice in Houston like they've had up in Dallas. So we're blessed. I had just about everybody show up in my group class tonight except three people. So we still are getting kids coming out, and it doesn't matter that it's 37 degrees. They're still coming out. They're crazy, and I love them. So.
I mean, let me ask you, 37 degrees was summer here a couple of times. We were out there. I mean, we tried to get out there. But then also look at the real rational. I mean, only a couple of days, but look at the real. Is it worth it sometime? Because I will admit, out of 365 days here in Georgia where we're at, I may miss 2 weeks for weather at the most. I mean, just two weeks at the. So I really, really, really can't get that mad. Susan, I want to know. I just want to know. Did you see some of the posts that were up there? Some of the comments. Some of these long posts that we had in the group this week. I mean, Daru had a post of 388 comments. Jared has more. I mean, there was a post that I posted that went the wrong way. 288. I think we're doing pretty good there on that, on those folks getting up some good questions on there this week. What do you think?
I think, you know, it's one of the most active tennis sites out there with a lot of people with, you know, coaches with different experiences and background, you know, asking questions, learning, exchanging information. It's great. It's, you know, it's a very active group, and I think that's great. I think that's what you're supposed to do is exchange information and learn. And, you know, yes, at times it can get a little bit passionate, but, you know, I think that's a good thing. And I think people in this group do a great job of keeping everything in check.
Well, good note about the post that was there. The post, I want to jump on Coach. I want to talk a little bit about Coach Daou's post. His post in general was about college tennis. It was about, you know, how colleges and how coaches and how the college tennis is filled with foreign players versus American players. And his opinion of it, which I actually support, completely. You and I differ a little bit, and I know your biggest thing is the tax money, where understand that, but I also understand that there's so many intricate parts in sports and behind the closed door that when people tend to say my tax money is supporting this, well, I don't necessarily know, because universities, either state, they get so much money from other places that your tax money is not really supporting this young man. Maybe it's just his straight talent for being better than our kids. I mean, that's the truth. I mean, I just hate to say it, and I think people don't understand that playing college tennis itself is not this glamour game. It's not about being fair. It's a business, and sometimes that business becomes
It is a business, and you know, I can't wait to talk to our guests about his experiences, because when I was coaching was, I think, back when he was doing it back in the late 80s, early 90s, when he was beginning coaching. And it's fascinating with the international students coming in, because we were it was just starting. And I think from my perspective, I mean, yes, there's a little bit of tax dollars in it, but I think it's far more, and our guest actually had a lot more Americans on his team than most of the other teams in his conference, from what I know about his conference and his teams. But, you know, looking at everything, it's as a coaching group, how can we prepare our juniors to do better and to be more competitive? And I think that's something that coaches really need to look at and talk about. Yeah, and I can't wait to talk to Tony and ask him what are the things that he would suggest. Would he suggest to kids that, you know, maybe you homeschool and go play some ITF tournaments and travel and get that exposure? Maybe, you know, what his ideas are versus, you know, what people are thinking. It's a very interesting issue. I'd like to see international students still be here, maybe having it more of a set amount that they get, maybe half, you know, half of it can go there. But I don't know. I don't think there's any cut, you know, any easy answer. I'm looking forward to hearing what Tony has to say about his experiences with it, because, like I said, I was just getting started. And as far as the business-wise, one of the things that I had said to a player that I coached high school-wise that ended up playing at Penn State all 4 years, and Tony probably knows her, which is Leanne Merriman, and I said, you know, you'll never work as hard, never make as many connections, and will never be as tired as you are when you play college tennis, because you're always on the go. And she had told me years later that that was the best advice she had been given, because I was completely right.
I mean, that sounds like a one of the successful stories in college tennis. You know, and I, through my college career, I played college basketball, big top college basketball. And to me, as far as coaches is concerned, as far as college coaches are concerned, I only know success, meaning most of the coaches I know, they were successful, or if they understand that it was a business, they understood that they didn't lose. If they didn't win, especially in basketball, if you didn't win, you could be replaced, especially signing these multi-million-dollar contracts. But when we start really analyzing now, we as people, as fans, we're looking at these college coaches, at Georgia, LSU. Hey, I'm just going to focus in the SEC, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Missouri State. We're looking at these coaches and, wow, you've got the glamour job. You know, I wish I was a college coach at one of these schools. But today, I think it's going to be interesting to hear from someone who was someone that I consider a trailblazer for Afro-American coaches, for all coaches, but just for Afro-American coaches, because we need role models. But someone who's represented himself very well through controversy, all kinds of controversy, things that we couldn't imagine that went on, and I couldn't imagine it. And I think that this is going to be a great time to see the opposite side of all that success that we hear about, all these different college coaches, all these different things. You know, is it really a business? That's really, well, I hope today, I guess, shows us that, hey, it's a business. And, hey, you have to protect yourself in anything that you do in this business and in that higher college. High school is different, but we're talking about college. You've got to realize that you are maybe just a number. You know, I'm not going to say anymore. I'm going to introduce I'm going to let Susan introduce our guest and let Coach give us a little bio. Then I'm going to be Coach's floor for the next 30, 35 minutes, and I want to hear his story. I want everybody to hear his story. I want to hear what he really has to say about experience that he had in LSU at his school. It may be different than every coach that we know, but it's his experience, and that experience could end up being someone else's. So, Susan, it's all yours.
All right, and I apologize because I am the world's worst person at saying last names, so I apologize, Tony, in advance. But Coach Tony has the best coaching record at LSU history. He took his team. He has 30-plus years experience. He took his team to the NCAAs. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Coach, 17 times. Am I correct about that?
Actually, I was there 21 years, 15 times.
15 times, but you've got a 30-year coaching background, if I recall, correct?
No, well, playing too, if you combine.
Playing
too. Yeah.
And I mean, you have a wealth of knowledge, a huge background. You're doing stuff on the Tennis Channel with a good with some friends and colleagues of mine, being that I'm an L.A. girl and I have all those L.A. ties. Yeah, Kerry Buck and all these L.A., you know, Hollywood types. But, Coach, welcome. I can't wait to get the in-depth, up-close, personal story of your experience at LSU, how you managed to run a program for so long, a successful program, and tell your story of what happened so that other coaches can hear the other side of college tennis. So,
yeah,
coach,
well,
take it away.
Susan West, I appreciate you guys having me on. It's funny because it's when you look back and you kind of look at the whole time. I started at LSU in 1992, and I was 26 years old and about as green as the grass outside as far as understanding. I went from men to women and, you know, kind of adjusting to that. But over my career, I felt like, you know, we had a very successful time frame. One of the things that I was most proud of is we had, as you alluded to earlier, we had a lot of American kids, but we also had some great internationals, but I would say the majority of our kids were American, and we actually made two Sweet 16s while I was there from 1995 to 2012. We made the NCAA tournament 15 times in 18 years. I was fortunate enough to be named Regional Coach of the Year 5 times and SEC Coach of the Year once. But I had some really tremendous players that Megan Falcon is a young lady from California who got ranked as high as number one in the country. She was a 3-time All-American for me and got to the semifinals of the NCAA tournament. Bruna Colosio was a 3-time All-American. She was ranked as high as 6 or 7 in the country and 3 in the country in doubles with Anna Morse. Susana Rodriguez was a 2-time All-American. So I was very blessed and very fortunate to have some kids that were, you know, great students, great student athletes, very good contributors to the team, and many others besides those. But my story goes as far as kind of the last few years is concerned. What really, in around 2007, 2008, I became very suspicious of some of the administration. And we had hired a new athletic director, a gentleman named Joe Oliva, who was at Duke and actually was at Duke during that whole Duke lacrosse scandal and came to LSU. When he came, I was warned to really keep a lookout, you know, and be very cautious and careful. And so luckily for me, I documented and I put together probably 300-400 pages of documentation because some strange things started happening. In 2008, one of the things I prided myself on was following NCAA rules and always trying to, you know, teach the right thing, kind of what you guys were talking about a little bit earlier. And I was reprimanded. This is going to blow your mind. I received an official letter of reprimand for buying motivational books for my team to read over Christmas out of my foundation money. I was accused
of
stealing. I was accused of. We went on a trip, and we went to Auburn, and we had a trainer who was from the track team. She lost $100, and I gave it to her out of my pocket. And then actually later on, I ended up getting reimbursed out of foundation. I'd given the rest of the players $14 and forgot to give it to her, and I was accused of stealing $14. And then I kicked a kid off the team, you know, and so I was accused of treating this student athlete poorly. So at that time, I was like, what is going on here? But I documented, and I had some friends of mine that were attorneys and responded in a letter back. And, you know, and actually the ex-athletic director who was retiring at the end of the year told me when I showed him the reprimand, he said, this is stupid, don't worry about this. I said, I understand, but you're about to be gone. And so he ended up retiring, and, you know, I wrote the letter, you know, basically saying, you know, just refuting everything that was in it. Never heard a word back. So in 2008, we made the NCAA tournament, beat Long Beach in the first round. I take the bet, Washington State in the first round, lost in the second round to Cal Berkeley, and finished right outside the top 25 in the country. And on my evaluation, I got below average. And I'm thinking,
Coach.
Okay, yeah, hello?
Yeah, Coach.
Hello?
Coach, I wanted to ask you a question. Hey, Coach, question was it illegal for you, or was it a violation of you giving them $14? I mean, if you were giving them $14 for food?
No, it was a mistake. Yeah, basically what happened was each student athlete, I owed $114 for the trip, and our trainer was on the track team, and so I'd given all the kids $100 and gave them all $14 later, and I forgot to give the trainer $14. So it was just a mistake, and so it wasn't any. Go ahead.
So they considered the $14 that you withheld, or not going to say withheld, made a mistake. I mean, made a mistake.
Right.
$14 that whatever the $14 is $14. The $14 they use that. They actually use that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not laughing, but out of all the things and of all.
Okay.
Out of all of the money that I've said, I mean, someone actually approached you or brought it up to you about $14?
Well, what's even better for my case, they put it in writing. And and actually, so it was, so after that, we, make the NCAA tournament, lose to Cal Berkeley in the second round, and I get a below average on my evaluation. And so, you know, I approached them, and I'm like, what's this all about? And, you know, they were just kind of like Kim Hodd, and I didn't really press it. So then the next year comes along, and we're ranked between 15 and 25 of the nation the whole year. Both years, all six players on my team, all six starters were American kids, and mainly four stars. There was Megan was a blue chip and a five-star. But, and so in 2009, we actually upset Florida. We had a great year. We made the NCAA tournament again, lost in the second round to Stanford. I was one of eight coaches voted regional coach of the year, up for national coach of the year. And on my evaluation, I get below average again. And
wow.
So at this point, I'm going, okay, this is not right here. But I decided I wasn't going to back down. So I approached my athletic director, and I said, so you're going to look me in the eye and tell me that I had a below-average season. And he said, I have high expectations. So you know, he sent me this letter saying his expectations for me was to be a top-10 program every year. What was ironic about the whole situation was later on, he goes on a TV show and states LSU at the time, they're getting a brand new $17 million indoor-outdoor facility right now, but for the longest time had the worst facilities in the conference. And to a point where with this bad weather right now, when it would rain, we couldn't practice. Our only option was to go to a club at 9 o'clock at night. And so I was pushing to get a facility because it was becoming an eyesore that when we were in a situation where, you know, if we're playing Tennessee on a Saturday and it rains on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, there's a realistic chance we would not have the opportunity to even practice. And so I was pushing for that. And so Mr. Oliva goes on TV and says, you know, the one sport we're going to have a hard time competing for championships is tennis, because if you're a really good tennis player, you're going to question coming here because we don't have indoor tennis facilities. So until we get that, we're going to have a hard time. Now, he's saying that publicly, but privately he's given me a letter saying I should be top 10 in the country with, you know, in this situation. And here's the thing about me, as far as expectations, I'm not afraid of going out and competing and, you know, having it fair and square, but there were some limits here, and that made it actually tough to get to a level where, you know, you're competing with the Floridas and Georgias and Vanderbilts, and those schools not only have great reputations, coaches do a great job, they have outstanding facilities and players in the state.
Excuse me for interrupting, Coach, but that's what I was going to say, because, you know, as Wes will tell you, being the Virginia girl that moved out to California, I can remember when I was down at Blacksburg at Virginia Tech, because I trained at UVA growing up, and UVA growing up had, you know, the typical outdoor courts or whatever, but the Virginia Athletic Foundation actually bought the Boar's Head Inn so that the men's and women's team could have an indoor facility, and then they expanded it. And I would think not having an indoor facility would dramatically hurt your recruiting. Am I right?
Absolutely, because it just made it hard because right now, okay, the weather's bad, it's been raining, and it wouldn't be unrealistic for us to be practicing right now because the only time we could get in the country club was 9 to 11 at night, and the club was 30 minutes from the court. So the administration knew it, and they knew the necessity of it. But at the same time, I can say that, you know, the integrity that this leadership has displayed is, you know, in my opinion, has been really embarrassing as far as just the depth of deceit, you know, with a lot of things that were done. So so anyway, I went back and forth, and so they're talking about potentially building the facility. And so then fast forward to my last year in coaching, we actually, you know, made the NCAA tournament for the 15th time. We actually had to play Texas A&M, and we played at the University of Michigan. After we played the match, we lost to A&M. When we got back, Mr. Oliva called me in and said, hey, I'm not renewing your contract, and you need to go see Human Resources. So when I went to see Human Resources, the lady says, you've been at LSU 21 years, but in the state system 19 years and 11 months. You're 1 month shy of health insurance for the rest of your life. And I said, well, I've got 1,400 hours of annual leave. The men's tennis coach before this current one used his annual leave. Can I use it? And she says, let me check. A few days later, my attorney calls me and says, what in the heck is going on? And I said, what are you talking about? She goes, what's up with your health insurance? I said, I'm a month shy. She says, okay, here's what they're going to do. They're going to tell you if you agree not to file a claim, they'll give you 1 month limited employment to get to 20 years. And I said, they're going to leverage my health insurance. She says, trust me. A couple weeks later, I received a phone call from Human Resources that said, call your attorney. And she says, okay, LSU says if you agree not to file a claim, they'll give you 1 month of limited employment to get to 20 years. I said, tell them I'll sue them in court, and I won't tell you where they can shove that offer. After they, when they were stunned when my attorney told them that, and afterwards when they saw the documentation I had on them, they went ahead and gave it to me. So, and that's a kind of a quick version, a roundabout. There's so many other things that went down, but those are a lot of the main points. But so it was, you know, so afterwards I applied for a couple other jobs, and, you know, one of them being William & Mary, and I'm on the phone with the AD, and he's got his four assistants, and he says, you got a great resume, we're going to fly you out there. And when I flew out, the head booster just point blank looked at my resume and said, what did you do? You had to have done something wrong. You know, who fires a coach, has just made the NCAA tournament, has done the things that you've done. And so I started to realize that for my tenure as a coach, I always wanted to do things with the utmost integrity, and I had to really make sure that I fought to get the truth out there, because it's amazing you can work for something for so long, and in the matter of a couple weeks, all of a sudden there's a suspicion, you know, okay, what really happened? So I have the attorney that I have is considered probably the best employment attorney in the state, and she's fantastic. And November 21st of 2012, we ended up filing a lawsuit. And I think if you have followed this, the USA Today, there was a writer that wrote a few articles. You know, case in point, this is a perfect example, and this is nothing that wasn't in the article. During depositions, a senior women's administrator said that a sports psychologist that was hired by LSU from Atlanta told the administration that my team was in crisis, that we were having all these problems. When that was printed in the USA Today, about 2 days later, this sports psychologist called and said, I never said that, they're making it up, and did a follow-up article basically saying that it was all made up, and also she signed an affidavit saying that that wasn't true. So it's been very muddled back and forth. Felt like we had a ton of momentum going forward with the suit. I feel very confident. I'm very disappointed and really surprised that it was dismissed about 3.5 months ago. But my attorney, you know, immediately called me and said, you know, you need to appeal this. So, the legal process takes a while, but you just got to keep swinging away and keep chopping at them and just understand that what you're doing is right. And just go for it.
So, Coach, what do you think was the motivation for the turnaround? Do you think it was the coming of the new AD who actually wanted to have maybe replace you with someone that they wanted to bring over? Or what do you think the motivation was?
Well, my honest opinion, I felt as though, and it wasn't just the AD, or there were a couple other people too. I felt as though as long as I was there and I was quiet and going about my business, it's fine. But when I start speaking out as an African-American, I felt an extreme shift. And one of the reason I say that, I can't tell you the number of people throughout the years that would come to me and tell me, we're going to give you the brand new trainer because we hear you're one of the easiest coaches to deal with. We're going to give you the brand new sports information person because we hear you're one of the easiest coaches to deal with. And so all of a sudden I'm an easy coach, but when I'm speaking out, and speaking out was right, and no different, and in probably a more professional way than the other coaches. I mean, there were coaches that, you know, go in and, you know, they're yelling and screaming, and there was none of that with me. It was just very professionally pointing it out, and they didn't like that at all. And that's where I kind of felt, because it really made no sense, because, you know, I've never really had problems getting along with people. I've never really had issues with what was interesting. My bosses before this group, what my other bosses said were my strengths. This group was saying was my weaknesses. And so it was calculated. And as you go through something like this, you start to realize when you see all the documentation that you get that, that they were, you know, they tried to set me up for something. We caught them fabricating a policy that didn't exist to reprimand me. I was reprimanded for a situation that they totally made up the policy. So listening to you in your introduction about the dark side of college athletics, I mean, I've seen the great side and I've seen the dark side with this. But I will say this, it would surprise people the number of phone calls that I've received around the country from other coaches and even in other sports that maybe haven't experienced to the extent that I have, but have, you know, hey, I need to pick your brain. This is just between you and I. You know, what do you suggest here and there? And I think that it's something that as college sports goes forward, there needs to be a standard of integrity that is adhered to, because basically you're not teaching these kids anything. You know, it's comical when you hear, you know, people, fans that criticize a football player or criticize a basketball player or whoever, but the culture perpetuates a lot of these actions.
Correct. Very much so. Very, very much so. And I know it happens. I mean, it happens in any sport. I can recall, I'm sure, Coach, you can remember, I'd have to be even Susan Umeg. Oh, it happened to me about 10, 15 years ago that the assistant coaches, I think it was a thing in basketball, I don't know if it was the black assistant coaches, but the assistant coaches won a big lawsuit from the NCAAs for being treated unfairly. I think wages were unfairly. So, I mean, it's out there, and it never gets brought into light. It just never gets brought into light. And I think that, you know, whether or not you're wrong or you're right, I'm fascinated at the fact of loyalty, meaning that, you know, whatever improprieties there were, whatever there was, there shouldn't have been any, to me, there shouldn't have been even any mention or even thought of a month. What's a month before your health insurance is for this, even for your tenure? I mean, I'm looking at a record of 15 NCAA tournaments out of 18. You know, I'm sure you know, Coach, but how many schools who don't even get to the NCAA tournament, I mean, let alone, you know, 15 out of 18 times. You know,
there were so many. And, you know, here's another thing. Initially, you know, they said that my NCAA violations were why I had to be counseled for NCAA violations, and which I had, I can't, maybe a handful of the pettiest things, like the book type things. But in deposition, the compliance coordinator said that I was better than most coaches at following the rules. So the contradictions are all over the place, and the untruthfulness is all over the place. But, you know, I think, again, with players, with parents, with everybody, honesty is such an important tool. It's so important in any relationship, business, you know, whatever. And I'm not going to file a lawsuit against LSU unless I'm totally believing in what I'm doing and I'm wrong.
Well,
you know, I'm not going to do this just to, I mean, for me to put my credibility and name out there, I have facts, I have hardcore facts, I have written facts, I have video facts, I have the facts. And, you know, but at the same time, this is a process, there's a lot of back and forth, a lot of things going on, but as a guy who grew up in Baton Rouge, as somebody who watched LSU and coached LSU, it's been very disappointing with the leadership's lack of integrity.
Yeah, I would agree that, and it haunts you, because even trying to get new employment, even you just talked about going to having a stellar resume, and now you go get another job, apply for another position, and first thing they're going to say is, why are you applying for a position? So
right. It
hurts you now to have been so good, because now it brings up the conversation of, okay, why are you available, which becomes a different aspect. But I'm curious about understanding or trying to see, did anybody ever stop to think about your players? You know, when you're going through this process of when the AD or when things are going through, what was going through the minds of your players? What was going through the minds of knowing that, I mean, I had the experience of having a coach that I was with Coach Calhoun for 3 years. In my senior year, we played Connecticut, and we beat Connecticut, and they offered Jim Calhoun the job the very next year. He left, but we had a good relationship. But it seems that yours was more turmoil. Yours was more destructive, not as positive. Did any of the players ever come up to you and express their concern, their support, their this dishonesty or disbelief in what LSU was putting you through?
I purposely didn't let them know anything. I mean, my assistant just knew what was going on, but the players had no clue as far as the intricacies of what was going on. And I kind of, you know, to this day, one of the things that I don't want to do, because, you know, I've had players that have reached out and support, but at the same time, you know, 21 years, a lot of those years were good, and I don't want those players to feel a certain way about LSU because of this, because, you know, that was a great experience for them. That's their university. That's who they played for, and I don't want to put them in the middle of my deal. You know, and so I've talked to some and, you know, told them the story and all this, but at the same time, I don't want to skew their view too much of the university that they played for. And so I purposely really haven't, you know, I've reached out to players and stuff, but I don't want to get them involved because I want them to feel comfortable going back to matches, going back to games, and not worrying about what's going on, because I'm fine. I'm fine with everything I'm doing.
I understand that with Coach. I have right now. I'm going to take a break. I think I have a caller that wants to come in and say hello. Hello, hello.
Hey, hello? This is Chuck.
Hey, Chuck. How are you, my friend? How you doing?
Well.
Introduce yourself.
Well, Chuck Tomlin, Atlanta, Georgia. An instructor here in Tyrone, Georgia, and. Just like thought I'd call to say hi and show some support for the show.
Oh, thank you, Chuck. Thank you. No, we can use it. Did you have a chance to hear Coach Tony's story and some of his story? I know you followed it some. Do you have a chance to hear some of what you think? What do you think? You know, I know you have kids that have played some college tennis, and you're not unfamiliar with college tennis, and you're definitely a SEC person. Some of the things sound shocking to you, or how would you think?
Well, you know, I'm just not really surprised at anything LSU would do.
that's definitely a personal dig.
That sounds like an Auburn person to me.
Yeah, yeah, that was an Auburn comment. Supposed to be funny.
It was, but and the sister, what do you think? Have you followed the story? Are you familiar with the story, Chuck?
Well, just roughly. I haven't followed. It sounds like a very, you know, tough situation. I don't have enough of the details, and I didn't get to catch the first part there tonight. I was listening in here for like the last few minutes, took my call. But I know it's unfortunate. It sounds like he really gave a lot of effort to the program, and I know it's such a challenge with the current situation in Division I tennis and you know, trying to compete in the SEC.
Chuck, do you have any, since we've had him, got you in the class, is there any questions knowing, you know, you have kids that have played college tennis, and then you've got one coming up, Alex is coming up, who's in the temp. Any question that you would want to ask Coach Minnesota, you know, opinion, you know, anything that you want to ask him?
Well, I probably need a minute to think about that. To listen to more of the conversation here.
All right. Well, I'm going to give you a minute, Chuck, to get yourself together. We're just going to keep right on going. But one thing, another thing, Coach, I wanted to touch on to you. What about the USTA, the PTR, the ITF, all these different organizations? Do they play any effect into things that go on in college tennis? Do they get involved, that they have, were there any supports, or were there any involvement in these organizations with your case?
No. It's totally. I've seen support from different facets, individuals and stuff, but there's no organization that's come out and done anything with it, and that's kind of a complex deal. But to be honest with you, I've got a tremendous attorney that's been very successful against LSU numerous times. It feels very strongly about my case. I'm very, we were 12 days before court when it ended up getting dismissed, and so we just kind of dust myself off, get back up, and keep coming forward and keep coming at them. And that's what I plan to do. Like I said, from a standpoint of documentation, from a standpoint of the facts, from a standpoint across the board, it's pretty clear that I was treated differently from the other coaches. And, just the justification of saying second round of the NCAA tournament is not good just shows you the level that they would go. I mean, it's actually comical to really, you see, I always tell people, you see in the NCAA tournament, everybody jump up when they're announced, but for me, now here's a funny thing too, I forgot to tell you, I got a bonus the same month I got fired for what LSU called athletic excellence. So they gave me a bonus for qualifying for the NCAA tournament, and the title was you've achieved athletic excellence, but then it's not good enough. So, at the same time, it's just, I think part of this is they're not used to people standing up, and I think this stuff is important because it not just affects me, but affects people down the line, people behind me, and I think it's important for people to know what really goes on at these different institutions.
I agree. All right, now, as we moved on in time, and as every good tennis coach and great tennis coach, we get fall down, we get back up. Now I see this, I wake up in the morning, or I wake up and I see this show, this fantastic coach on the show now, out here highlighting colleges, looking good. How is the new show going? I want to tell us about your new show. Tell us about this new job. The new job, well, it's not new, but the second, what the season is? This is the second year?
About a year and a half ago I got approached by the production company about the potential of doing a TV show, and they said, hey, brainstorm and let's talk and think about it. And so I said, let's think about what about college tennis, and they were like, hey, this sounds like a good idea. And I had actually, it was funny because I'd done something with their daughter and on camera. And afterwards, they called me and said, we think you could be okay on TV. And so we came up with the concept of Inside College Tennis, and this production company is fantastic. They have won Emmys for different things that they've done. And so we ended up shooting a three-minute sizzle at Tulane and shipping it to a tennis channel, and they said they loved it. And so over the course of the last, we've done seven shows, and our seventh one is going to premiere this Sunday at 7 o'clock Eastern time. But the previous show that premiered a week ago will premiere at 6:30. So from 6:30 to 7:30 at the Tennis Channel, you'll have a whole hour of Inside College Tennis. And they're going to replay throughout the months of March and April. But we've got a lot of fantastic feedback about the shows.
It's a great show. I mean, I've seen every, I mean, since you sent me, I mean, I've seen every, since, I mean, I've known about it a year. I mean, last year, I've known about it when you started some stuff you sent me, but I've seen all of the shows, and I mean, it's a good show. It's something that, I think that one of the problems that we have in tennis and that tennis has is the PR, the advertising of it, the getting out there, the pub. This show should be running not just on the Tennis Channel, but should be running on ESPN, should be running on all the shows, because these are shows that get kids interested in going to college. I mean, it's a very fun show. It's not a stuffy show. It's a fun show. I mean, it's a fun show. It's showing you the fun side of tennis, and people don't understand it. And kids don't see that. Kids don't understand that. And I think it's a great show.
One of the ideas that when we initially talked. talk was not just to show the, you know, top schools, but to show, you know, we did a show in HBCU, we did a show in Division II, want to do JUCO, because one of the things that has even opened my eyes up a lot is there are places for all kids to receive scholarship and education in tennis that don't even know the opportunities that are out there. We went to, I was floored at Southern New Hampshire. Did you see the show last week, or have you seen that one, Wes or Susan? Or it just, it's going to air again this weekend, the Southern New Hampshire show?
That's the Southern New Hampshire, New England?
Right, right. We just, I think we just did a show there. Okay, we, man, it was beautiful up there, and the tennis was good, and it's a great opportunity, and I had no idea. So I think the dynamics of doing a show like this, to have kids that may not be ranked, you know, as high, that still have an opportunity to get a great tennis experience, a great education, and have fun. And so I think that, to me, and the second thing, as a coach, so many times I would go to my assistant, okay, these kids are clueless coming from high school because it's such a different jump. And so one of the ideas that I actually had was to let kids and parents kind of have an idea and see what to expect, what a practice is run like, what weights and conditioning, the different facets of it. And so I think those are some of the things that we're trying to highlight.
That's great. Yeah, it's funny. I'm from the North. And I went to school in Boston. So people here, I tell my students all the time, listen, you know, y'all should go up north. You know, I tell them to go up north. It's like a whole other country to them. They're like, who goes to tennis to play tennis up in north? And I tell them, you'd be surprised. Some of the indoor facilities, outdoor facilities, there is some lovely tennis facilities up north and a lot of great opportunities. I mean, it's because it's a different area. I mean, tennis down here is—I hate to say it—tennis down here may be a little bit more stronger, tougher. They go up north, they find different opportunities, different spots, different teams. I mean, it's a great experience. You know, it's a great experience.
Go ahead, Coach.
No, I Southern New Hampshire. I was like, man, this place is awesome, and the number one player. I was like, man, I could have used her. I mean, where was she? It was really neat. And at HBCU, we did a special where we kind of connected the dots between ATA and you know, we've gotten a ton of feedback. I actually had a guy named Lex Carrington call me from Massachusetts, and he's written a book on the history of African-American tennis from 1890 and 1962, and we got connected, and, you know, he was all excited about the show because he played with Arthur Ashe and trained with him, and, you know, he was a really good player. And so it's been, to me, the joy of it, in my experiences, you know who Mike Krzyzewski is. You know who Dean Smith was, who Nick Saban. You know who all those people are. But those same people in tennis, people don't know. And now's an opportunity to get stories out to where people can understand. You know, Dave Borelli, when he was at TCU, he had won, I think, 7 national championships at USC. Tim Siegel at Texas Tech, the amount of fundraising he does. And these stories really carry on, and it makes it actually very fun.
The show looks like you have a lot of fun, and anytime you can do a job, and it looks like you're just having fun. I mean, that's good. That's excellent. I mean, the show is
well.
It's
that's
great.
Funny because the producers, that's all them. They pretty much tell me, because when they came to me, I was like, before the first show, I'm like, do I need to practice? And they're like, no, be yourself. So I'm like, okay, you sure I'll need to practice? No, be natural. So we're driving, and they look at me, and they say, you nervous? And I go, are you kidding me, worrying about myself and 10 girls? This will be a piece of cake. and so they the good thing about TV, you know, you mess up, you just do it over again.
yes.
Yeah.
It's not live TV. So yeah, I'm having a blast doing it. It's a lot of fun. And like I said, I'm working with great people that are really very experienced in what they're doing, and I mean, ton of knowledge, and it just really helps a lot. So they're helping me probably look better than I really am, just because they can take the 50th screw up and the 51st make it look okay.
That's right. Well, we're down to our last 10 minutes, and I know Susan has a couple. So we can squeeze in another five before we start to close up. I know Susan has a couple of questions she wanted to ask you, Coach, before you get out of here.
Yeah, Coach. You know, there's been a lot of talk on the forum lately about international students and versus the Americans. And as I mentioned in introducing you, I had always known that you had typically for a top-ranked school that was consistently in the top 30 had usually more American players on it than most and stuff. And I wanted to – so you could talk to other coaches that are training kids to – you know, what would you suggest as far as helping them prepare so that they're more marketable to college coaches taking that next step? Because – from my experience, from back when I coached, and I won't even tell you the year, but it was a long time ago, I think back when you just started coaching.
Coaching only 22.
It's changed a bit, and so I thought it might be nice if they had heard it from you on what your perspective and take, since you're still in the midst of it.
I think the problem that I see with junior kids today is they have to – what I would recommend any parent is, number one, be extremely grounded and understand where your kid's at. You know, there's too many parents that, you know, think, okay, this kid's this good when she's not quite as good. And so you can go into things with unrealistic expectations. But – and, Wes, you've been a basketball player. This should really resonate with you. I think, from what I see with junior tennis right now, that the competitiveness and the drive is everything as far as what it takes to play at a high collegiate level. You have to be overly committed. You have to work in the summer. You have to train. You have to do it with a commitment. And I'm not quite sure that the whole culture and the system kind of lays where it puts kids in a position where once they get to college they're a little bit in shock. But I think that the biggest part to me that I see is the lack of mental toughness from the kids going from juniors to college. And I'll give you a good example. I always talk, and you ask anybody, hey, what's the ratio is to the game, mental and physical? And most people say 70%, 80%, whatever. And then you say, okay, how much do you work on the mental aspects of your game? And very few kids coming out of juniors don't do it. And so when you get to a certain level in college, I can hit the ball just as well as you can and Wes can, but what separates us is going to be the mental toughness and the point structure and the strategy, but also that desire and competitiveness. And in my opinion, I don't think that is taught enough as they're growing up. And one of the things that I would do every year, every girl on my team has seen a tape called Playground by Michael Jordan four or five times, and he goes through it step by step by step, and I've recommended about just the competitiveness, and it relates from basketball to tennis to everything. And so to me, I think that, you know, parents and kids, you've got to be extremely truthful, kind of understand, hey, if you're going to SEC, you can't come in there half-stepping. You better be coming in there understanding I'm going to work my tail off. And, I mean, because you come in, because you're going from, okay, 14s to 16s to 18s, and then you get to college, you're going to the whole world. And so the competition is up a notch or two. And so there's an adjustment, but just because you, and I used to tell my players this all the time, when you look at a Tiger Woods or Michael Jordan that said, hey, when I got to the pros, I had to change my game, you sure as heck may have to change yours. You know, and I think a lot of kids are kind of set in their ways as to how, you know, we always did this and we're successful. So, I mean, I don't think it's really that drastic, that many drastic things. I just think it's a mindset and an attitude that needs to be incorporated, put kids in another situation.
Yeah,
I think what fails us, we got another 2 seconds before we let you go, Coach, but I think one thing that you touched on and I think that I find interesting, and I really only find it in the tennis world, that winning is not everything. That winning doesn't matter through development. We don't have that in other sports, and I think that's the problem with tennis. I think that coaches and parents, we develop kids and not wanting them to feel the feeling of loss or of failure. When I hear a coach says, well, winning's not that most important thing in tennis. While you're playing a game, winning is the most important thing. And if you don't teach kids that from the young, how to do that, then when they get older, they lose exactly what you said, the edge of competitiveness. Why? Because you gave them an option of finding out what winning is not important and what winning is not important. In basketball, winning was everything. Why? Because if we did not win, you waited to play the next game. So winning made you keep going. Why? You practice hard to win. When coaches say, well, winning is not the most important thing. It's not just a development stage. No, you have to teach kids how to win, and that starts the first day they pick up a racket. When you tell a kid that winning didn't mean nothing, don't be upset, you're hurting the kid in the long run. In the long run.
I was going to tell you one thing, too, you know, specific to tennis. I mean, what other sports do you hear of tanking? Mm-hmm. You don't hear it. I mean, and just think about that. You hear it a little bit here and there, but not to the extent you hear of it in tennis. And I think that, you know, it's an individual sport, which is tougher in a way. But as far as when you and I, you know, first started to now, there were some internationals, but now it's so competitive that for parents to say, I want to send my kid to Georgia, I want to send my kid to USC. I mean, that commitment is something, and it's got to be something that they want to do and they enjoy doing. It can't be forced because that's going to backfire every time.
All right.
I agree.
Well, Coach, we're going to have to, we got 2 minutes. We've got to get ready to close it up, but I want to thank you very, very much for coming on and sharing your experiences, your knowledge, and giving us an insight on what it's like to be on some of the darker side of college tennis and your story. You know, it may not happen to someone else, but it's your story, and we who love tennis should understand this story. You know, I want to thank you, and I hopefully that we'll get you to come back, because there's a whole lot of things we could sit here and talk about. Definitely about the foreign tennis players and about college and all your insight. And I want to thank you for coming on. And Susan, I know you want to thank Coach for coming on.
Absolutely, Coach. Thank you again for sharing your story and for spending time with us and letting people understand what really it is to be a college player and to be a college coach. And I just want to thank you for taking the time out today this evening to spend with us. So thank you, and look forward to talking to you more in the future.
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me on the show. I really enjoyed it. And, hey, 6:30 to 7:30 Eastern time, Inside College Tennis. Got to get those ratings up, okay?
We still
will.
You know
we
I'm
will
doing.
Work on that.
Okay. All right. Okay.
We will. All right. Thank you, Coach. Thanks.
Okay, guys. All right. Thank you. Take care.
Okay.
All right, Susan. What a great coach. What a great. We got some great stuff. Some great stories and some information tonight that I think is important for tennis. You know, we've got
absolutely
1 minute to wrap. We got one. Go ahead, Coach.
Absolutely.
We got 1 minute to
wrap this
up. We got one minute to wrap this up.
Yeah, I was going to say, absolutely. I think a lot of great information, and what a classy, classy guy. And I wish him all the best in his new venture with his show. And we need people like him in our sport, and hopefully he will not only be doing the show, but he'll be coaching the team and making them reach their potential. So, but I'm excited about our upcoming show.
Yes, I want everybody to know our next show. Coach Jared Flick from Colorado area, he's going to come and share and tell us how great tennis is in Colorado. Well, we're going to wrap this show up. I'm Coach Wes Fuller, along with Coach Susan Arnie, saying good night and thanks for listening this evening. Susan, take it away.
Good night, everybody. Enjoyed being with you this evening, and look for another big show with Coach Jared on Thursday. So get ready.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too, Wes. Good night to you.